This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
But as far as like constructed goes, it's like, yeah, if this deck ends up being really, really good, like I could see playing it in the Pro Tour again, but like 4 rounds into the tournament, I was like, my deck sucks. Just like straight up, my deck is just this clunky pile of crap, and for whatever reason, no one could beat me. You know, like, so I...
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mind Flayer.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hello and welcome to the A-Team, episode 249. Coming at you with a lot of words and a lot of things really fast before I get kicked off the internet. It is Jeremy Scumbag Schofield. Coming at you with the King of the Motherfucking North, Mr. Jay Boosh.
Fat.
Bam. And then the quiet one, who'll talk more, who'll be more, who'll be out east, Mr. KYT. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I mean, I've had to talk more since our comrade left us. I mean, I've been trying to pick up the slack, and at least people, our fans have been appreciative of that. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Absolutely. Well, this threesome's picked up a foursome today because we got ourselves a ringer coming in live from his Wisconsin hotel retreat, glamorously across the road from a card store. The bringer of light, Mr. Jerry Thompson. How you doing, buddy?
I see we've upped our nickname game.
Yes, we have.
Up the game. Absolutely. No, it's fantastic to have you here, Jerry. You're in Wisconsin. Are you getting ready to do some crazy testing for a Pro Tour coming up here?
Pretty much. Just trying to lock it down. We have the Grand Prix in Madison, which is where we are for the next week. And then we're going to move into some cabin out in the woods. I don't know. And then Pro Tour Milwaukee, Battle for Zendikar.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. So, how's everybody feeling this week?
I'm feeling awesome.
All right. I was glad somebody said something because that hung too long.
The Canadians are too polite, you know? You're always waiting for everyone else to go first.
Yeah. That's kind of it. Like, we all have our little talking hat and everything like that. Like, oh, I get to talk now.
Okay, I'm stealing the hat, Jared. Is that okay?
Go nuts, buddy. Go nuts.
Jerry, so are you working with the same people that you did for PT Origins?
Yeah, we picked up a few people, and we lost one. We lost Tom Martell to Ultra Pro. We're like 17 deep this time, so it's a pretty big team, but we only have 6 people here right now, and then Ross Merriam is joining us tomorrow, I think. And then a lot more people come in on Friday before the Grand Prix.
Wow. So you started working with them like for Origins, but I'm sure you were friends with a lot of people you were working with, like Brad, et cetera, right?
Yeah, I know all the people on the team, just, you know, from running into them in tournaments, sharing hotel rooms and stuff like that. So it's Brad Nelson, Ari Lack, Seth Manfield, Chris Fennell, and a bunch of other people, you know. I'm not going to list everyone, but...
When you guys are working like in a team scenario, I'm sure there's still people that are like, don't want to play the deck you want to play or whatever. So what do you do in that scenario? Are you guys like all on the same kind of page, or are you guys just mostly there so that you guys can, like, train a gauntlet?
So that's the important thing, is staying on the same page, making sure that, like, everyone is in agreement as far as, like, what is happening around us, because it gets really bad if, you know, like, parts of the team splinter off and go work on their own things, and, like, they test their own matchups, and they come to different conclusions, because then, you know, we're just kind of at this impasse where we have to agree to disagree or whatever. But as long as everyone is on the same page, you know, maybe at some point, like, Brad points to something and he's like, I feel very strongly about this deck or whatever. And then people are like, okay, what you're saying makes sense. Let's test this. Let's figure it out. And then we'll play some games. And if all the stuff that someone says is true, then maybe people start latching onto a deck. And this maybe happens like half a week to a week before the Pro Tour. And then sometimes everyone's on the same page, you know, and people want to play the same thing, or, you know, sometimes people go rogue. Like, Kibler generally does that. He just wants to play his own deck.
Mm-hmm. Like, last time most of you played Green-Red Devotion and with the same, probably same 75, most of your team, right?
Yeah, I think we differed by a couple cards mostly. But, yeah, Kibler was the one holdout who played small green and white creatures. But, like, you know, we knew he was going to do that. That's just his thing.
So you're talking about being on the same page. It sounds like that's kind of a good goal to always have there, but how do you combat getting into that groupthink mentality? Like, where everybody just starts to agree just out of comfort and trying not to buck too many waves?
Well, that's just really dangerous. I mean, like, we need the people that are going to buck the waves. Like, just straight up. Like, we need people that are going to be like, no, I don't think that's true, and then we have to figure this out. Because, like, yeah, if we just sat and, like, you know, agreed with whoever spoke up or talked the most or sounded the most convincing or whatever, then we wouldn't get anywhere. It would just actually be a net negative to do that. So there are a lot of people that are naysayers on the team, and that's actually a good thing. So, like, when you actually put in the work and you convince the people to come around to your side that, like, what you're saying is true, that's good, and that's like a victory. Then you know you've won. And if you're able to convince people on the team who are otherwise naysayers, then you know that, like, what you're doing is probably true, because they're not going to go along with it very easily.
So is it, like, the goal to try and find the deck that isn't the green-white creatures that Kibler will play? Is that kind of, like, the main goal? Like, let's get into this, and let's find something so good that people will get away from what they traditionally will play to play it because it's that good?
No, like, that's not the goal. We're not trying to, like, get everyone to play the same deck or anything. Like, people should play what they're comfortable with. Okay. And yeah, I mean, it's like, we basically just want to figure out all the information for the format and what's going on in the format, and that people can choose to attack the format different ways.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
And I don't think it's important to have, like, the team unity as far as, like, what deck we all play or whatever. I think it's just important for us to try and help each other have a more successful tournament.
Mm-hmm. So recently you made big noise by top eighting with a Bring to Life deck, and you had once again posted an article the same week just telling everyone what you were going to play. And you did that last time, and I actually personally messaged you. I asked you, Jeremy, like, are you actually planning to play Jeskai? And you're like, you're probably not going to play Jeskai at the PT, and that's why you were okay with it playing at the SCG. Is there, like, how much do you care? And, like, a lot's been made where, like, Cedric was saying, like, you know, Jerry just doesn't give a shit. He'll just let everyone know it and play whatever.
Yeah, dude, they can't beat me anyway. So, who cares? I used to do this thing in team draft where, if you guys are familiar with this, like, there used to be a lot more money drafting. There's not a lot of that now. But it's, like, 3-on-3, you can talk to your teammates and stuff, and it's, like, you play everyone on their team, and it's like,
yeah,
best of 9, first team to 5 wins. And so, you know, like, you play some guy round 1, and then everyone finishes their matches, you switch opponents, and then the opponent's going to be like, all right, what kind of tricks did you see? You know, like, what stuff do I have to play around and whatever. And I used to just, like, show them my deck, especially if I had a bunch of different stuff. Because,
oh, yeah.
So, the, like, balls. The balls.
Yeah, well, no. It's not about balls. It's me tricking them. So if some guy says, like, oh, he has, like, Giant Growth and Overrun, and it's like, those are the things I saw, those are the things you have to play around. And it's like, no, actually, I want there to be more on my opponent's mind, you know? Like, I want them to know that I have, like, Giant Growth, Overrun, Might Evoke, like, whatever. Like, every single trick in the book, basically. Because if they have to think about every single thing that I possibly have, then that's better for me, and it's like much easier for me to bluff those things too.
Yeah, it gives you the strength to bluff those things because they do know that.
That's true. That is true.
And if their teammate is just like, he only has giant growth or whatever, then how do I bluff my device? You know, like I have to put that in their head. So, as far like, also it's just me not caring, but as far as like constructed goes, it's like, yeah, if this deck ends up being really, really good, like I could see playing in the Pro Tour again, but like 4 rounds into the tournament, I was like, my deck sucks. Just like straight up, my deck is just this clunky pile of crap. And for whatever reason, no one could beat me. You know, like, so I lost to Demarz in top 8, but I beat him in the Swiss, round 1 of day 2. And then after the match, he was just like, you know, should I kept my hand in game 3? And it was like this thing that kind of spiraled out of control. His hand, he mulliganed. I believe he was on the play. It was 4 lands, yeah. A Titan Strength, and a Thunderbreak Regent.
Yeah.
And I didn't know his exact deck list at that point, but I was like, having like this Lava Spike card in your deck, along with like your go big, kind of like dodge your removal Thunderbreak Regent thing, just like doesn't make a lot of sense at the same time. Because it's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to kill me quick? Or are you trying to like make my removal bad? You know, like doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not very cohesive. So I was like, A, I don't know how you can possibly win with that hand. Like, yeah, you get a scry and maybe you scry into like a good 1 or 2 drop for your turn 2 play or whatever. But like, really, that hand is just terrible. I don't know how you're going to win. But also like the fact that those 2 cards are in your opening hand is just kind of a joke too. So like, what the hell is your plan against me, you know? And so it just goes from there. And he's like, well, how do you think I should have sideboarded? And he like lays out his sideboard and he cut Dragon Fodder against me. And he's like, oh, like it just seems really bad against like your Radiant Flames. And it's like, well, I have 10 red sources or whatever, like maybe I had 12 or something, and only 3 Radiant Flames. Plus, it's like really hard for me to like cast that card on turn 3 consistently. And I have, otherwise I have to like spend spot removal to kill your goblin tokens. Like I don't have a ton of blockers and you're boarding in like Heel Cutter and Roast to kill my rhinos. So like, I think I'm pretty sure he just cut the best card against me. So then in top 8, naturally game 3, he draws 2 Dragon Fodders, kills me with them. I use like spot removal to kill 3 of the 1/1.
Yeah.
So I kind of screwed myself there. I feel like if I did not say anything to him, he would have just sideboarded the exact same way. And I may have beaten him. Maybe I don't remember who he played in top 4 or whatever, but like I beat Demarz Majors and Jeff, the guy who played Esper Dragons that Majors beat in top 4. So it's like the rest of the top 8 was good for me. It was just that like I actually helped Demarz beat me, which sucked.
Yeah, I only had time to watch the original match, and it just like it didn't seem like I could think of how he could possibly draw with that hand to be able to beat any reasonable hand from your side.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he can sculpt like his first 5 draw steps and like have a good shot at beating me, but like you can just mulligan to 5, you know? It's like if you mull to 5 and have 2 1 drops, that hand is infinitely better than anything else, you know? Like especially that 6 card hand. So I don't know. It like stuff like that happens all the time where someone just like get scared of mulliganing, or you know, they're just like, oh, well, just scry into like this thing, or like maybe I'll play Abbot on turn 3 into a 1 drop, and like, you know, they just create this false narrative where they're like, oh, these sorts of things can happen in order for me to win, when it's just like, no, dude, just mulligan. Like you get a look at 5 new cards.
So Jerry, you said like after round 4 you thought your deck sucked. What was your feeling after the tournament?
Oh no, that feeling persisted throughout. It's just,
okay,
as it happens. Not a lot of people could beat me, and I ran really good. I know that. I did not get punished for my mana, both because of like the absurd mana cost in my deck, but also because I had to play 27 land to, you know, be able to have enough colored sources in my deck to cast my cards. Except for the round I lost in the Swiss, where I played against the mirror match, except he cut the Bring to Lights, but he was still playing like all 5 colors. And I won game 1, and then game 2, I kept a 5 lander and didn't draw a spell until turn 5. And then in game 3, I like mulled to 5 and just like also didn't play any spells. So that was the match I lost. It was when both those games happened in the same match.
It's kind of hilarious to hear you say that, just because like everyone around me that was like watching or tweeting or messaging me or, they're like, find out what Jerry's deck is. I want to play it for the PPTQ on Sunday. And they're like just saying how awesome it looked on camera, and you're thinking like, my deck's a pile.
I tweeted as much, and people were like, no, we don't believe you. And it's like, that's fine. I mean, I don't lie. And yeah, where can I find his deck list? It looks so sweet. It's like, well, I posted in my article this week. You know, sure, I changed some stuff, but I don't know. It's funny. There was a Reddit thread about like, is Star City Games Premium worth it? Like while this tournament was going on. And Cedric and I talked about it over dinner on Saturday night. And it was really funny, especially since there was like an instance of that just like actually in motion where it's just like, oh, it's not worth it. Like all the pros hide their technology or whatever. And meanwhile, I'm just like, here's the deck I'm playing. This is the tournament I'm going to play in. And then I just annihilate the tournament.
Right. Well, that's why you've always been my one of my top reasons to have Premium. One of my favorite writers, like even through the Cobblade, Darkblade, Sparkblade era, you would just post whatever updates you felt were right, and you would actually run basically what you would say you would run even then.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I don't see a reason why not to do that. You know, it's like I sure I get paid to write articles, but it's more than that. It's like I want to be very public facing and open, and like I want to be teaching, like that's really why I want to write articles, and people can listen to me or not, it's up to them, but like I generally don't hold anything back. And for the pro tour, like Brad wrote in one of his articles a couple weeks ago where he's just like, you know, right now everything is fair game, we are writing about everything, which is true, and then after this open, this is kind of when we go into lockdown. I think like now we're probably going to write about our decks that we played and like our thoughts on them and stuff. But then past that, it's going to be like, I might write like some theory article next week or something before the Pro Tour. I'm not sure what, but yeah, I mean, there's just like no reason. Like we're not going to break it 3 weeks before the Pro Tour, and we're probably not going to break it for the Pro Tour either. So like we're not trying to win the Open that bad, you know, like that is just not a thing. Like we just don't care enough.
Yeah, I mean, reading your article on the deck before you played it, you were just saying how, like, well, you didn't expect aggro, you weren't expecting aggro decks, but you were saying how, like, decks that go, like, under you were probably bad matchups, and decks, like, that go way over to the top, like Ulamog decks, were likely going to be bad for you as well.
Yep, and I played against the Tarka Red 3 times in the Swiss, beat it every time, and I played Green Red Landfall, also beat that. And then I lost to Demars basically because I told him how to beat me. But and there was like maybe I made some mistakes too. I know in game 3 I didn't draw a lot of spells. I drew like 6 spells and 9 land, and like a lot of them were spot removal against his tokens. And then in game 1, like maybe I fetched poorly or whatever. But like I ended up being at 1 and needing to draw like an untapped land to cast Bring to Light or whatever, and I drew a Rhino that I couldn't cast because I didn't fetch any white, but the way that I sequenced my lands, like, it made sense to me at the time, but in hindsight, like, I don't know. So, like, yeah, maybe I just, like, blew that match too. I don't know, but yeah, the Tarka Red matchup did not seem bad, even though I, like, didn't even really have anything specifically for them. It's just, like, that deck is so bad. I think DeMars' build is reasonable and it's kind of where you need to go, but I also think DeMars' deck is probably worse than just a normal landfall deck.
Okay.
Because he was talking about how his like Lightning Berserkers were bad and his Dragon Fodders were bad, and it's like, bro, just play Scythe Leopard or whatever, you know? Like the mana in the green-red landfall deck is not that bad. You have to play a bunch of extra lands, but like that's actually good too, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I do think that the landfall deck is really good, and it's mostly because like the creatures on their own are very resilient. And the guy that I played round 1, it was like our games went long, and I boarded in my Anafenza in the board just to like block his little guys. And it was like on turn 8 or something, he drew a Scythe Leopard, and he had just like 4 fetches in play. It's like, dear God, you know, that thing's so big. So the deck has like a lot of resiliency. I like that deck a lot, but.
Jeremy, did you want to pick Kids Braymore and Bring to Light?
Well, yeah, I really like the card. We were talking, we go through this set, the spoilers as it's coming out, and I just like the Bring to Light because I'm a big fan of Silver Bullet style decks and stuff. So when I saw that you were playing it, I kind of went out of my way to watch a little bit more coverage than I have been of late. And where do you see that deck going? Like, do you see that this deck is going to be something that's going to kind of hang around, or is this kind of like a two week type deck? Where, well, you play it this week, some people play it next week, for their PPTQs, and then it just fades off.
So my issue with the deck was the mana, and that's probably fixable to some extent, and also I might just be like kind of blowing it out of proportion. You know, like, it's not perfect, it's not up to my standards, therefore I think it's not good enough, and I can find something better, like something that does something similar but with a better mana base. Like, maybe I cut a color, maybe I cut the Bring the Lights, I don't know. So that's one issue with the deck. The other issue is that, like, the toolbox, like, it exists there in theory, right? Like, you have this card that can get a bunch of different stuff, but the toolbox cards are not very good. Like, you're only getting spells or creatures, and it actually kind of sucks that Siege Rhino is around, because most of the time your best card to get is just another Rhino. So instead of, like you have this toolbox thing where it's like, okay, sometimes your Bring to Light for Rhino card is actually Bring to Light for Languish or whatever, but most of the time you're just like, well, I don't know, I could, like, get this Winnower and pick off his little thing, but it's not better than, like, draining him and having a giant Trampler, you know? So, Silumgar's Command is, like, the big bullet card, and I should have had that in my main deck, but I'm too stupid. So, I would do that going forward, basically cut the Impersonator for the Silumgar's Command, and then, unless you want to make drastic changes to the deck, I would probably keep it as is. I think it is still reasonably solid, and then fix the sideboard, but, like, yeah, it's so disappointing that you have this toolbox card that, like, doesn't actually do it for you, because, like, the instants and sorceries are not that great, and the one creature is just so good. So, you know, I did get a Nissa a decent amount of the time. The Nissas were very, very good. Something that helps you make your land drops, turns into this big threat. You don't have a ton of things that are giving you, like, card advantage while also being a threat, and Nissa provided exactly that, so... I definitely am interested in playing decks with, like, three Nissas, like Majors, green, white deck, I think is very, very good also. But yeah, like, Bring to Light is fine. I just don't think that it's worth it to play the full five and also this five mana card and operate only at sorcery speed and stuff. Like, I definitely would have liked to have a lower mana curve. Like, I didn't have a lot of things on two mana. Ken Ketter's Fiery Impulses looked very, very good. So I could see a list that is more five color with, you know, the Fiery Impulses, maybe just closer to Kent's deck in general. I'm not sure, like, what he lost to or why, but I definitely like the idea of having more threats like Mantis Rider and having Fiery Impulse and stuff like that. So I don't know. Like, you have five colors. You can build your deck to, like, lean towards any, like, Wedge or Shard, whatever you think is easiest for you. But I do think that, like, Jace Rhino and probably Bring to Light are definitely a deck. But you can build it so many different ways, you know, like, even the guy that built the deck, whose friend made the original Reddit post, sent me his updated list with, like, Den Protectors and Deathmist Raptors, and he's just like, look, these cards are just, like, better than removal spells or whatever, and I kind of bought into it until I realized that, like, it's really hard to play Den Protector, or not Den Protector, but Deathmist Raptor face up on turn three.
Yeah.
So, I like the idea in theory, but it didn't work out in practice, you know, if like, you're cutting an Abzan Charm and, like, some other stuff to play these Deathmist Raptors, and then on turn three you can't even play it to, like, block the Rhino or whatever. What's the point, you know? So there are a lot of ways to build it. I don't know what's correct, and I probably won't be able to figure that out until after the Pro Tour, until we actually have a meta game.
Yeah, so this just might even be a case of a deck that's just too soon. Like, it needs another set. It needs a full set complement to have the keys and to have those bullets.
Yeah, and that's definitely a part of it, too, where it's like, a deck like this is only going to get better, right? Like, we have two creature lands right now, both of which are very solid, but depending on how you slant your deck in the future, maybe you want, like, the Is It creature land or whatever, assuming that they're as good as these ones. And, yeah, you get better spells, possibly better creatures, better two targets and stuff like that. So, who knows? I mean, like, the deck is probably not going to get any worse unless a lot of the decks in the format speed up. But as decks get more and more tuned, that kind of just happens naturally. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Have you looked at it at all for Modern or anything? Is it just too expensive?
I mean, 5-mana sorcery, it's got to be real good, you know?
Yeah.
Because decks are trying to kill you on turn four and stuff, and there's Remand. But I've heard of people talking about playing it in, like, Living End, just, like, building a completely different Living End style deck, and that seems kind of cool. You know, I'm kind of interested in what you can do with that, like how to put creatures in the graveyard and whatnot. Like, we do have, like, Golgari Grave Troll and Stinkweed Imp and stuff to dredge a bunch, so maybe it's good. I don't know.
Restore Balance? Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one. That seems like, I don't know, that seems like you're probably just better off playing the Cascade cards, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, how are you going to cast this 5-mana thing and also want to stack all your lands or have all border posts or whatever? I don't know. I like, people say these things, and it's like, yeah, I could see how that might work, but I would need to see a deck.
Yeah. Yeah, the only reason that would be really nice is that you could kind of probably get a couple Planeswalkers going before you fired it off. But then you're probably dead also. Then, so.
But, well, either you're dead or they're dead, you know? Like,
yeah.
Do you need to restore balance at that point? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So yeah, deck is fine. It is not unplayable by any means. I just feel like I can do better. I do not want to play like this slow, awkward clunker. But this deck is definitely good enough to win tournaments, and I probably should have won the Open if I did not talk to Demars, or maybe if I played better. I don't know.
Do you think if Rhino wasn't in the format, this card would be still playable? Like, would you still have enough of a threat range there to like? Where you're not just pulling that out. Like, I could see this card being playable if, like, when Mono Black was in the format too with Gary, if, like, it wasn't Devotion, but it had, like, it was something else where you're draining. But it feels like that drain is, like, and then getting left with a big trample body is, like, what's making this card good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was why I was able to beat all these aggressive decks despite not really having anything. It was, like, aggressively mulligan until I have something to do on turn two and turn three, and then the Rhinos just start coming. And it's like, yeah, maybe they can beat one Rhino, but can they beat three? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, and that's how I felt that the Mono Black deck was a lot, too. It was, like, super boring to play and play against when I was playing it. It was just, but it was the same. It was like, can they beat two Garys? They can never do that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If Rhino didn't exist, what would we be doing? I could see it in just, like, the Mantis Rider shell, like Ken Ketter had it, and then maybe you find, like, a different 4 or 5 drop to find. You know, like, Gilleaf Winnower was very good for me. The Ojutai was not very good, which is why I didn't play with it. But I could see, like, just finding that or just, like, trying to find different spells to find. You know, like, the Silumgar's command is very good. And maybe you play, like, a couple Ojutai's commands. So, like, if your Jace dies, you get to, like, gain 4 life and bring it back, and that should buy you enough time to maybe flash back. So, yeah, I don't know. We'd be in a different world completely. So I have no idea.
Jerry, like, we're talking a lot of constructed. I want to ask you, how your plan or how your team prepared for draft last time, and how do you expect to prepare for limited this time around as well?
So limited last time, I didn't really get the hang of until like the 6th draft. I felt like I didn't really know what was going on, but like also last time we did kind of the same thing where we went to the Open in Chicago, and then we went to Dallas, got a house there, played in the Grand Prix, and then went to the Pro Tour. So it's like very similar. And last time, by the time I got to Indy, I had played like maybe 30 matches of standard and 0 limited. And this time I've been playing a bunch of standard, and I had played like 2 pre-releases and done 2 drafts. And I already feel like I understand things as far as limited is concerned. And that has been reflected in our drafts. I have not lost a match yet. So, So I don't know. Back in the day, I used to be good at limited. I used to play it a lot more. It was more interesting to me than constructed, and that has kind of flip-flopped over the years a few times. But I don't know. People forget that like most of my Grand Prix top 8s are in limited. So right now, I'm working hard, trying to understand these formats. I'm devouring a lot of content, talking to a lot of people that I think are smart, and now I'm just like trying to get everyone else up to speed. So last time it was like we're all kind of lost, and we're just kind of like figuring things out as we go, and it was kind of a slow process. And this time I'm just like, I understand this already. Like, this format is pretty simple in my mind as far as like there's not a ton of nuance to it. You kind of just like figure out what the Open thing is and get into that thing. You know, you just figure out what the color pairs want to be doing, and maybe you figure out what the sideways stuff is, like the weirdo stuff. You know, maybe there's like some 3-color decks or 4-color decks that are good or whatever. But yeah, it's very similar to like Lorwyn or Modern Masters, where you just find the Open deck and just like try and jam it and hope that like you end up with like 23 cards that fit in that archetype.
what did you learn like after maybe much later for Pro Tour Origins that you would have liked to have known earlier?
Well, the first things that I heard were that like the format's super fast, it's very Zendikar-y. If you miss your 2-drop, you just die. So I'm just, like, playing a bunch of Grizzly Bears in my deck that just, like, don't line up well against these Renowned creatures. And as soon as they get a Renowned hit in against you, then they have, like, the Topan Freeblade that's 3-3 Vigilance, or the Crone Sergeant, which is 3-3 First Strike. And now your Grizzly Bears just don't do anything. They just, like, they don't rumble in combat. You can't, like, get through them. You can't block their stuff. And I think I wasted just like several drafts prioritizing things like, you know, 1G22. And that was just a huge mistake. And I also like didn't think that there were a lot of ways to be able to come back from their fast starts where they actually did get a bunch of things renowned. And that just wasn't the case either. So there weren't any like obvious cards. There weren't any like Tarot's Faithfuls that you can just point to where you're like, oh, this card is obviously an anti-beatdown card. I will put this in my control deck. Like, you had to work for it. You had to play like a lot of Guardians of Miletus and maybe have a Languish and stuff like that. But like, control decks were viable and six mana cards are playable and stuff like that. And I think just like listening to the random, I don't know, like water cooler talk about the format before I went to the Pro Tour was really bad for me. Whereas this time I didn't do that. I just like played games myself and tried to figure things out on my own and then talk to people.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
But didn't you say that was the problem with team playing? Is that you don't want to be the guy that goes off on its own?
Well, no, you have to kind of go off on your own from time to time. You have to explore those spaces, but everyone's got to learn from it. I think that's the big thing.
Like in Jerusalem in World War Z, if everybody agrees, then like one of you has to be the guy that disagrees. Because there's something you're missing if everyone's agreeing. Kind of. I dig it.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with Pro Tour Origins was, like, we all thought that it was super fast and there was nothing you could do like, except for, like, try and outfast them. And that just wasn't the case. So, yeah. But the biggest issue with our drafting right now is that a lot of people aren't really in hard archetypes. Like, they don't seem to understand what cards go in certain decks. What makes a good, like, blue-red colorless deck, for example. And so you'll see them, like, maybe playing big Eldrazi's more than they should or playing more colored cards more than they should and stuff like that where it's like, at the end of it, they just kind of have like a mishmash of random cards instead of like a cohesive, synergetic deck. And, I think it is really important to like, if you're drafting like blue, black, black, red, or blue, red, that you just end up with like 20 colorless cards because they're all very, very important. And now I'm realizing that like the Stormcrow with Ingest is like super important too. There are drafts where, like, early in Pack 2, I have this choice between Mist Intruder, that's the Stormcrow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, or Ulamog's Nullifier, the 2UB, 2-3 Flash Flyer that counters a spell. And it's like, right. Well, the Nullifier is way more powerful, obviously, and I don't have a ton of things that ingest them right now, at least early. I had a bunch of the 3-2s, the 3-mana 3-2s, but, like, it's pretty unlikely that those actually get in a bunch of hits, you know? And 2 cards is a lot to ingest. But it's like, no one wants the Stormcrow, I'll get it later. And just like, didn't see any. So ended up needing that Stormcrow really bad and the Nullifier never did anything in my deck. So yeah, stuff like that where it's like, you have to learn at what point in the draft you're supposed to be taking like the enablers and the rewards.
So one of the things that's odd is that I'm kind of in like an exile right now for work. I'm in the boonies. And okay. I haven't seen any actual Battle for Zendikar cards. I haven't actually got them in my hands yet. So I'm coming back into the city. I get to play some draft. I've never touched the draft or anything on it. What is like 2-minute advice that you could give to anybody who hasn't had a chance to sit down with it to kind of, what would be the best piece of advice you could give? Because you've gotten some drafts under your belt.
Yeah, basically, I think I've drafted 5 times at this point. Okay. But try and figure out what the open archetype is or what cards people are not taking. I do think the colorless, like very fast, kind of aggressive Eldrazi decks are where you want to be. Like, I think those are probably the best decks, at least from what I've seen so far. And I especially like the red cards, like the 1R14, the 2R31. And if we're getting into like uncommon territory, like Vile Aggregate is just bananas. Like,
okay.
The 2RX5. And yeah. I just want to pound people with the red cards. Like those just seem like the best cards by a mile. But like the blue black processor deck is very tough to draft because all the cards look so bad. But I think you just want that to be your tempo deck. And then I don't know, allies is pretty straightforward. Like white black life gain or red white, just very aggressive. And I haven't really liked the small removal spells all that much, like the Gideon's Reproaches.
Okay.
I just feel like most of the stuff that you would point that at are not really worth killing unless they have flying.
So this is like a very proactive set. Evasion is kind of very powerful in this one.
Evasion is really good. Like, the board gets cluttered up with, like, random Scions and stuff. But there aren't really any dedicated flyer decks. Like, blue-white maybe is something you could point to as, like, oh, they have, you know, like, the Wind Drake and the Snapping Drake and all this stuff. But it's, like, if you're drafting blue-white, like, it's kind of better to just be, like, in an Awakened strategy. But, yeah, sometimes they end up with a bunch of flyers and it's bad. But it's, like, most of the time you're just, like, what am I going to do? Like, kill your 2/2 that I'm just going to invalidate in two turns anyway. Like, basically, if I'm playing, like, red-white allies, I don't want a ton of those tiny removal spells. Instead, like, I want a Smite the Monstrous, maybe an Undo Rising, or some sort of trick like that that allows you to win a race. Or something like Core Entanglers, or the 2R22 that gives all your guys menace. Like, you definitely want ways to, like, break through on the ground, but I'm not too worried about any individual creatures they have. You know, there's nothing really with utility anymore. There's nothing like a Hollowed Healer or, like, Prodigal Pyromancer or anything like that that you actually need to kill. So,
yeah,
I haven't really liked those removal spells all that much. But, you know, I do think that, like, if you see, like, a late Gideon's Reproach or something, like, that is still kind of a signal because I think people are still going to value those cards highly. So it's kind of this weird thing where it's, like, you don't really want to pass that card because people will interpret it as a signal. And if you get it late, it is probably a signal. But that's because everyone else is operating under different information, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a little more than 2 minutes.
No, that's really good. That's a lot of information. That's really good. I know we have a lot of half-casual people who are listening to the show who don't get a chance to draft as much as well. So, like, that's huge for everybody. The next question is, it's something that I remember AJ Soccer kind of always going into. He always bring it up when I was watching him stream was, what point do you have to kind of know what deck you're playing? Like, in some sets, you can get by, like, into 3 or 4 picks into the second pack before you really have to settle on a deck. Do you find that you kind of have to really set yourself pretty early in this one, or can you let it ride to wait until you see where the signals are going?
Yeah, like, this is one of them where I think that the cards are kind of built for their specific archetype. So if things like that are open, you are going to get the cards for that deck pretty late because no one else really wants them. So yeah, you generally end up with a lot of playables if you're in the open deck. So I don't think that you have to set yourself up, like, pretty early at all. Like, if you end up audibling by, like, pick 6 or pick 7, pack 1, because you see, like, a late Molten Nursery or something like that, you know, like, I think that is perfectly reasonable. And some people are a little more risk adverse and they want to just, like, take really good, like, single colored cards that are just good in a lot of different archetypes, like the Touch of the Voids and Outnumbers and stuff like that, where it's like, well, I could end up in, like, allies or maybe an Eldrazi deck or whatever. I don't know. So I kind of want to keep my options open so that they end up with enough playables for their deck. And that's reasonable. I just don't think that you have to do that for this format. So, like,
okay. So you don't have to wait for the person to your left to tell you what deck you're playing, or the person to your right. I mean,
yeah, I think you have plenty of time to wait, and in the meantime, you just kind of feel things out. And some people like to take the on-color cards that they will likely end up playing, but I don't mind just taking, like, a bunch of gold cards or just, like, shoving on something early, and, like, if it works, it works. Because, like, if you end up not playing any of your first 5 picks, that is completely okay. You will end up with enough playables if you are in an open deck.
Sweet. So you're on, like, a 2-week kind of Magic vacation right now, which is not really vacation because I imagine you guys are just going to be grinding. But
it's this weird combination of vacation and work.
Okay, well, yeah, you get great company, cool people around. I know how fun that, like, experience can be. Like, you always remember, you get great memories from it regardless. But how do you find, like, what is your life balance need to be in order to kind of get that 2 weeks to do this? Like, are you in a career right now? Are you just kind of doing the contract stuff with the articles and all that kind of stuff? Or do you have, like, a 9-to-5?
Yeah, it's not easy for everyone to do, certainly. Like, right now I said that, you know, 7 of our 17 people are here, and that's because a lot of the other people that are not here have full-time jobs. And then the people that are here now are the people that are basically just playing Magic for a living, including myself. So this is all I'm doing for right now. And I definitely know how lucky I am to be able to do stuff like this. And that people like Ari Lacht and Matt McCullough, other people on our team who have these full-time jobs, like, they can't devote the 2 weeks to do this. And they would certainly like to, you know, like, those guys definitely look forward to this time of year every time, because this is, like, the most fun that they get to have, for sure.
Yeah.
They just don't have the opportunity to come out here for the full amount of time. But it definitely helps if you're able to come out here and devote like the full 2 weeks that we're doing. Like, I definitely feel like we're going to be pretty prepared for the Pro Tour. And, you know, hopefully it's good preparation and not bad preparation. And we do pretty well. But you never know until the very end.
Yep. No, absolutely. Recently I saw an article or a video actually did. I think it may have even just came out today on Dredgevine.
Yeah. I did that before I left, but it did get posted today.
Okay. So I'm a big Dredgevine fan. I like the way that you're going with some of your stuff. I got to bring it back up because there was something in the sideboard that just, oh yeah, like your ley lines, doing your one of ley lines in the sideboard. That just seemed really,
what's
the mindset that?
I just copied the list from the guy that won the Modern Festival online. So okay. I understand the rationale. And my friend James Wynn does this in Shardless in Legacy.
Okay.
He also had one black ley line and one light white ley line. And I was like, dude, like, come on, what are you doing? And he's like, well, you know, it's like I could devote like 3 or 4 slots to burn because it's just like a horrendous matchup. And like, maybe I should just play all these chills so that I can beat it every time I play against it. But it's like, or I could devote this one slot, and 10% of the time it's in my opening hand, games 2 and 3. And if it is, I probably win the game on the spot. So you can just save sideboard slots like that and kind of just like juice your matchup percentage numbers by a little bit, but it gives you a lot of free wins too. So I don't know. Like it might be right, it might be wrong. I totally understand it. And I don't know if you watched the videos at all, but the black ley line is pretty clutch. So
yeah, no, I did not get a chance to watch them yet. I just saw that it got posted. I'm excited to watch it because I've been doing the dredge thing for a while. I was the guy who was like, why do we have a banned skeleton? Like, unban the skeleton. What bad could possibly happen by unbanning Golgari Gravetroll?
The deck is a lot of fun. That's the worst thing that happens, I think.
Exactly. It was a lot of fun beforehand. I like the angle of like doing the anglers and doing the murderous cuts. I like the lightning axe. Do you find that you kind of get yourself into the dredge routine, or are you going like in between dredging and drawing? Like, what dictates that for you?
With this deck, I was mostly dredging if I had the opportunity, just because there are so many things that you can hit off it. Like, if you hit a Gravecrawler, you get a free 2/1. If you hit a Faithless Looting, like, you can probably cast that. If you hit a Life from the Loam, then it's not that bad that you skip your draw step, because, like, on one turn, you can skip your draw step to, like, draw 3 lands, which is probably what you wanted in the first place. And then you're right there to casting the Gravecrawlers and stuff. So, yeah, this deck is pretty much a hard dredge deck. I imagine there would be some situations against something like Splinter Twin where you're like, well, to protect myself, I really need to draw a removal spell. You know, it's like, when you get into those spots,
the Abrupt Decay.
Yeah, when you get into those spots where the cards that you could dredge into don't really help you, I think that is the time when you want to just take a natural draw. But that didn't happen all that often in my videos. I was mostly just like flicking the Grave Troll, and that was it. And it was just easy mode.
Have you looked at any of like the blue based dredge decks, like Ven, like Vine decks and stuff like that? Seeing if Jace has kind of any place in it, kind of going more of a controlling route, Hedron Crabs and all that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, you might be able to do that. I'm not sure though. Like Hedron Crab is definitely the card that I would be excited to play with. And I played Dredgevine when it was legal and standard. It wasn't necessarily big, but I like playing it anyway. And
it was
definitely
awesome with like the 5/5 guy who mills when he dies or something else dies.
Yeah, the Extractor Demon.
Yeah, and Kedrick Leviathan or something like that. Just do silly things with that.
And you had like Bloodbraid Elf to trigger Revenge Vines and stuff.
Yeah.
I pay attention to those decks, and I look at basically all the modern lists that get posted for the Magic Online daily events, because I do the daily decks thing on Star City, the Daily Digest. So yeah. I've seen a lot of lists, and I don't know. I haven't seen anything that really looked like it was super tuned or like might be providing something that another list might not be. Like, I definitely want like the Jund cards in the deck. Like I want like the Lot Less Troll and the Golgari Grave Troll to like actually hard cast in the late game. I want the Lootings. I want the Grave Crawlers. And past that, it's like, well, do I play the fourth color? Because I'm pretty sure I'm locked into playing these three. And at this point, I don't think you need the Hedron Crab. There might be something there with Jace where you want to do something else, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to be more powerful than actually just kind of playing this beatdown deck like the one that I was playing was.
Yeah, no, I like the beatdown. Like, the beatdown is what I have sleeved up. The only thing that I really miss is I'm a big fan of Big Game Hunter. I don't know if you've tried that guy out in the sideboard, but I love that card.
What I will say about that card is that it is probably killing things that you don't really care about killing.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I really enjoyed, like, it was when I was in San Jose, I played in some bigger side event modern thing, and the thing that I loved about it was it was getting rid of Siege Rhinos. It was pounding through Siege Rhinos, and that was enough for me.
The thing about that is, like, your matchup against, like, Abzan and Jund is so good already that, like, do you really need that card?
Yeah, true enough. It doesn't do anything for Twin, which you need to be able to do something with.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to have, like, some removal spells in my sideboard, I'm probably going to want them for Twin, because that matchup seems pretty tough.
Fair enough. So, doing the daily decks, you're seeing all kinds of decks, you're seeing all kinds of crazy things. It seems like, from what I read, you like to kind of post a lot of, like, those outliers and kind of show off some of the really interesting, strange, zany things that people are doing. Anything that's, like, really caught your eye that you really want to go back at that you haven't had a chance to kind of explore?
That list would be very long and extensive, and I really like doing the videos, like, as we're, like, going into a new set where it's, like, not out on Magic Online, because then it gives me an excuse to, like, not play Standard and, like, actually go back and look at some of the Daily Digest I did and be like, I want to play that deck, you know, and then just, like, pick a random deck and go with it. And that's what happened with Dredgevine. And which deck did I do last week? Oh, the Bubble Hulk deck.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, so stuff like that. And then, like, the other deck that I wanted to do that I just decided would probably not make for good video content was, like, a mono-white prison deck.
Okay.
So, like, all the Porphyry nodes and Rune Halos and Ghostly Prisons and stuff. And I think, like, people were playing Enduring Ideal in that deck before to kind of lock it up in the mid game, but now I think you can just play Starfield.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that deck looked interesting, but it's like, okay, well, my opponent can't do anything, so I guess they're done, and it's my turn, and I'll play another lock piece, and it just didn't seem like that exciting to me. So I played the Dredgevine deck instead, and I'm glad I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, there's a ton of stuff out there. I don't know. I don't have enough time to do it all. It sucks. Like, modern should definitely be the format where you can play just, like, all the messed up stuff. But then there are the fun police out there that kind of, like, get in your way and stuff. So, I don't know.
From the video side of stuff, is the leagues, like, the adding leagues into Magic Online, is that really helping you out?
It hasn't yet. So, by the time they introduced the Standard leagues, like, Standard was already, like, on the verge of rotating and people had lost interest and stuff. And they just put up Modern leagues. So that should be really fun. But previously, I was just playing, like, the daily events, and it was kind of annoying because then, you know, I would record for 30 minutes and then wait for 20 and then record. And now I'm excited to just, like, go. And then, you know, maybe I play 3 matches and then come back the next day and, like, you know, do the 4th and 5th or whatever. So I'm excited for this. I think leagues are so good. Just being able to play whenever you want.
Oh, and it's huge. Like, for instance, where I'm at, I've got a crazy work schedule, so I get myself maybe a free 45 minutes, maybe a free 60 minutes to actually play Magic. So to be able to play something competitive that actually matters, where it's not a two-man, where those games don't really seem to matter, and you can actually get some decent value off of it, I really like having them because it gives me an ability to play competitive Magic when I don't have 2.5 hours to string together.
Absolutely. And, you know, for every person like me who just, like, has all the time in the world and does nothing but play Magic, basically, like, there's probably, you know, like, 1,000 or 10,000 people like you who are just like, man, I don't have time for all this. You know, I can't sit down and play a daily event. Like, this is 4 hours of my life. Like, I'm not going to get this back.
Yeah, no, daily events, I get to play maybe one a month.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the reality of where I'm at, so. I look forward to them. I'll jam 8-mans every now and then, but with the leagues now, I'm probably just going to be like a just straight up league player. It's great though when I draft though. Whenever you get to the split, the guy never has to argue with me about the QP. It's like, yeah, you take it, buddy. I don't care. So
yeah. What are you going to do with your five QPs, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, I'll string a bunch of them together, and then I'll never be able to actually play in the...
Yeah, are you going to devote 10 hours on a Saturday to playing that thing? And...
No.
Yeah, what I like is that despite all the hate that the online community has had for MTGO, that there's been like league. I love leagues. I've never had a problem personally with MTGO, but seeing that there's like enough interest that like at one point they had to increase the cap of the standard league. I mean, it because leagues, in order for it to survive and continue, and the modern league is just enough people in the pool so that you're actually not waiting that much when you're hoping to play another game. So
absolutely,
I'm happy to see that there's still the amount of player that we have now. Mm-hmm. So I think, Jerry, we're gonna let you go. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's about it. If I play Bring the Light of the Pro Tour, something has either gone horribly right or horribly wrong. I don't know. Definitely one of the two. But yeah, this has been fun, and I'm excited for the next couple weeks. This is the first Pro Tour of the year, so it's a pretty big game for me. Kind of dictates like how seriously I'm going to take this for the rest of the year. Otherwise, maybe I just kind of sit back, maybe pick up some more commentary jobs or something. Who knows?
Were you a queue for any of the WMCQs, or did you care about qualifying for that if you were?
Well, I could play in the qualifiers, but it's like flying to a PTQ. I don't know. Like, I wanted to, but... They came like after the Pro Tour, where I'd already been gone for multiple weeks, and then I also went to a Grand Prix the week after the Pro Tour, so it was like, I don't really want to leave home again, and, you know, I have a girlfriend at home that I would like to spend time with and whatnot, so.
Oh, actually, one thing I've always wanted to ask someone that's more on a pro level, like yourself, is something that came up in the last WMCQ, where I don't know what happens in tournaments you've attended to where, you know, let's say table 3 and 4, their decision can depend on the like result of another match. And I've seen some, if you know what I mean,
yeah, where it's like, if this match finishes to its natural conclusion or whatever, then we can draw and both make top 8. Whereas if they draw, we can't draw, we have to play or something, you know.
Right, and then some TOs in the past I've seen, they've decided to move the tables. Some don't. What's your quick take on that?
I would like, well, ideally I would like just that type of stuff to just not be allowed. Like, if you could have it where, like, there were no IDs or no draws, period, that I think that would be for the best, because then that just reduces the chances for collusion to actually happen. I don't think that's very realistic, unfortunately. So in a situation like that, I would definitely like the players to act without an outside influence. So if you can, you know, if you know that it's going to be an issue, by all means, try and move them or whatever. But I understand people can't necessarily do that all the time, or, you know, be watching for things like that. So it definitely happened to me where, like, I was moved to a feature match for an open, and another table was not, because they were assumed to be drawing into top 8, because, you know, the people who were picking the feature matches did the math, and they could have drawn in top 8 safely, and they ended up playing it out. And had I known that, me and my opponent could have drawn into top 8. But since they moved us for a feature match, I could not operate under that information. And so we just played the match, and I lost. And it was like, man, that kind of sucks. Like, I could have made top 8 had I known these guys were playing. But, like, on the other hand, it was actually just, like, very good for tournament integrity that I was moved and I was not operating under that information. So.
Right. Yeah, when we had the old PTQ system, the last one I top 8, like the one in Calgary, that was a case where when I won my match, I was locked in for 9th if everyone else had drawn. Like, everybody else would make it in. I was the guy who wasn't supposed to make it in. And I remember people asking, like, oh, how did your match go? And I remember looking at my opponent saying, please don't tell them.
Just, yeah.
Please be quiet. Do not say anything. Please just do me that favor. And then one of the judge went to say something, and I had to go and talk to him, just like, please, just don't, because if you say something, it will affect how this comes out. Like,
right.
Just let them come to their natural conclusion. Like, and that's where, on the judge side of things, I really like trying to separate those players. I really like to kind of stand over those matches and prevent the spectators from getting involved.
Yep.
I don't know if that can be really considered an outside information.
It is. It absolutely is.
It really should be, If they choose to draw based on outside advice on what happened in another match, it's not really a game action, but it's really, it's definitely has a lot of feel bads to it. So,
yep, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jerry. And good luck with your testing.
Thank you. I will need it. And if you guys know of any, if you guys know of any stick standard deck, let me know.
All right. I'll be sure to let you know.
Is this one with Bring the Light?
Never heard of it.
It's a dumpster fire, but dumpster fires are still hot.
True.
That was pretty badass.
Yeah.
I thought he, like, decided to talk way faster than he normally does.
He was talking pretty fast.
If you've noticed, like, we've had him on the show multiple times. He's probably up there in the all-time ranks with Tom Martel and others. But he was, like, rapid firing.
I'm going to take credit for that because I think I fired off the show real quick. Like, I fired it off. I got the pace going.
And he's like, what the fuck happened?
Now Josh doesn't have to listen to the show on 1.5 speed.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like
Josh who? Lamesh?
No, the proxy guy. I don't know if he even listens to the show anymore. He probably doesn't. But he always listens. He always tweets about how, like, he always, like, if there's a show that doesn't work well on 1.5 or 1.7 speed or whatever, he always tweets at whoever is doing that show, like, be it Money Draft or Brainstorm Brewery or whatever, and says, like, your shit doesn't work.
What, really?
And they're like, what do you mean? And then he's like, I'm listening to it at 1.5 speed, it doesn't work, it's stupid. And they're like, well, let's do it at 1.0 speed then. And he's like, no, I don't have time for that shit.
Yeah, well, I listened to mine at 1.2, all of them, and they should all work. I guess it's
the podcast that was a thing that you could even do. How do you?
Yeah, yeah. On it depends on which app you're using, but for me, I use Pocket Cast on Android, and I've done it for other podcast apps on the iPhone that I assume you have, and it's just it is a real time saver for podcasts that you expect to be like an hour and a half, and let's say you have exactly an hour bus ride, it could really make a podcast that you'd have to finish later on into a podcast that you just like, you're just done with and you can move on
right
to another show.
Yeah, that's nice.
So, yeah, so I definitely recommend that, but definitely they're probably based on the way it's encoded, or I don't know, they could sound too like that. So, Jay, what type of magic stuff, related stuff, have you done in the past week? Zero?
I want to say zero.
Mine's also close to zero, so.
I mean, like, we played, like, the pre-release a while ago, and then talked about it. And then, like, not we, I mean, like, me and my friends. And then we talked about, like, the format, what else we do. And then I couldn't get a thing to fire for the life of me. A cube or a Game of Thrones thing to fire. So, but I mean, like, I moved into my new house.
Woo! New house.
New
Bush estate.
Oh, and yeah, it's just weird that you're actually making this crap chat an actual thing.
I gotta do that.
He's doing it again.
I'm gonna get some more crap chats going on. Yeah.
And I'm like, why are people, like, I'm sure, I wonder how many people have unfollowed you because of that.
I hope none. But also, I want other people to crap chat me, because people have stopped sending me shit stories, probably because other people are finding out who they are, something, based on their, like, their butthole print. It's like a fingerprint. Evil. So, you know, crap chat. Celebrity, I want to see some crap chats. I want, like, a Jerry T. crap chat. That's what I want.
I didn't do much magic as well. I think I talked about my draft with John Stern last time, and I drafted again with John last Thursday or Wednesday, I believe, and one-2'd with a crappy green-red deck that, like, ramped into, like, Eldrazi's.
Oh, yeah.
But
I think they got rid of that. Like, I think the reason that deck worked, like, I don't know if you did it because you thought that deck would work like it did in the old days, or if you just did it, but I feel like they nerfed that because, like, all of the Eldrazi's are, like way worse than they used to be in terms of, like, what you ramped into. Like, even the uncommon Eldrazi's had at least Annihilator 1 or whatever, right? So then, like, I feel like in the other format, if you're ramping into something that is an 8-8 that then just annihilates one, like, that's pretty good. Whereas now it's like, oh, I'm ramping into a 3-4 that needs exiled cards to do fucking anything. Great.
You're right, and I you need specific the specific type of Eldrazi's that they have. I did beat John with them. I had the, I believe, the 7-5 that basically has pseudo annihilator where you exile two things when he attacks.
Yeah.
And I have the I think it's 8-8 or whatever his stats, the big fucker where all the creatures have all your opponent's creatures have to block him. So again, this is like a pseudo annihilator esque effect. I ended up being 1-2 because it was just the deck didn't it just didn't make sense. Like I had land, like I couldn't draft enough of the cards that would make it make sense. I had like aggressive red green landfall guys mixed in with ramp cards mixed in with big fat Eldrazi. So it was like it was kind of weird. And in one game which would have put me 2-1, I had the 7-5 out, felt extremely good. But my opponent, Nick LeBlanc, actually had the -5/-5 black removal spell. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I just spent all this effort, and this Eldrazi's toughness is just, like, made to be killed by that card. So, didn't do so well. But, again, the winner of the draft was an Allies deck. It was a green-white Allies deck, and I still think that a really good Allies deck is just super aggressive and pretty hard to beat. The green one is just in common is just insane.
Which one is that?
It's the when it, the green in common at 5 that gives your whole squad. Ramp it's function? Not yeah, plus no +2/+2.
Oh yeah.
It's just not like it's not even like just your the thing is before it's just like it gives your allies bonuses, but this gives all your creatures bonuses. So if you like randomly curve out with Eldrazi tokens as part of your ally deck somehow.
Yeah,
and you have that thing that makes 3 and then all of a sudden I've got hit by 13 once because that guy came down and I'm or 18 and I just look at like, my life total and I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and they're like, I'm like, holy fuck. Like
it's like so, he's kinda like an overrun that can overrun every turn.
Yeah.
He's got another ally.
Yeah. So some of these cards are just super aggressive. And I talked about that in the last episode, just like the red ally menace. Like out of nowhere, you can be taking a ton of damage. And just the ally deck is really, really scary. Whereas the other ones, like they feel more clunky to get to work. Like the ramp spells, you have to draw the ramp in the right order. You have to draw ramp first and then hope to draw Eldrazi or the Devoid decks even, like you have to again play some cards that like are kind of, I mean they're shittier in a vacuum than some of the other creatures, but you have to play them because they allow you to not Devoid, my bad, ingest. They allow you to ingest so that your other cards can take advantage of it. But
yeah, that's the big thing with those processors is that it really just seems that if unless you play the bad ingest guys, those processors are good for nothing.
Yeah, right. They're almost like what set was it? Was it Mirrodin that had like the red green dinosaur deck in Limited? Or it was just like a bunch of really bad
yeah, like sets. Scars of Mirrodin and stuff like
Scars
that
had, Mirrodin, had dinosaurs.
Scars. Yeah, it was Scars. Yeah, and it was like it was just bad cards. But then like someone figured out like no one's taking these cards. So if you take them and then you can just beat the slower like the super aggro decks you still die to. But like if you play the slower decks, then you can beat them by just curving out into a 6-5, do nothing. Like fucking Nessian Asp or that Voluptuous Fox or whatever it was
called. Yeah, it was just like a case of I can just get to 4-drop. My 4-drop's bigger than your Infect guy. My 5-drop's bigger than 3 of your Infect guys. My 6-drop is a dinosaur. And yeah, then you just Jurassic Park all over their face.
Yeah, I like that.
Holy fucking shit, it's a dinosaur.
What
the fuck? Dinosaur.
So what about you, Jer? Have you been like...
My magic stuck? Has really been...
playing outdated formats on Magic Online?
Little bit. A very, very little bit.
League?
No, I have been...
I have been rocking the eBay.
Oh yeah.
Losing auctions on those.
Like a boss.
Yeah, absolutely. Seriously. That's all it is my life has just been like instant snipe. It's like I'm at work and it's like, oh, you got outbidded. Oh, you just missed out. Oh, you got outbidded. You just got missed out. But I'm also trying to be reasonable. Like, I'm not just throwing buckets of money at these stupid things. I'm trying to get deals on them, which is why I keep losing them. Because if you don't pay enough for something, you don't get it. So that's what that's all been.
Explain this idea of commerce to me.
Yes. A thing has a perceived value. If you do not pay as much of the perceived value in an open market where other people can buy it, they'll fucking buy it.
Ah, shit.
Yeah, it's kind of bullshit. So, yeah, that's really been it. I'm really stoked to get home and get a couple boxes and play some Magic this Friday. Really, really happy for that. So I'm gonna be jamming that. I hope to have some more information on what things are. I'm really looking forward to jamming some Limited on Magic Online once the set comes out. I think that comes out this weekend as well. I'll probably avoid the pre-releases unless I get together with one of my buddy Nick. We always just play crappy value pre-releases online. But you know, that's kind of what that is. I want to play some paper Magic, so I'm really happy to be getting home to do that. This has been a
sweet,
ridiculously long shift that has just sucked. So
we all love you, man.
Oh yeah, no. And the tough part is that like I'm on the tail end of a 17-dayer, and I get to go home for 5 days, and then I have to come back up for 24 more.
My God, man.
Oh my goodness. It's disgusting. Terrible. So, yeah, that's the thing. But I'm hoping Magic Online will have the new cards and it'll be all happy. And I'm really excited to jam some Standard. And I'm really excited to play some Bring to Light and do all that kind of stuff. And yeah.
I'm glad that that Jer agreed with me that Bring to Light is a terrible card if you didn't have Rhinos.
Oh. With you, I said that too.
Yeah, but then I said it on the show.
Okay, yeah.
Heyo!
I remember us like thinking, it's like, this card seems kind of clunky, and then the funny story is that there was, you know, speculators and stuff, and even at face-to-face, we had someone buy a large number of Bring to Lights because it was at $2, and originally people... that were buying them misread the card. Well, not misunderstood the card for the reasons that I mentioned when I asked
you. We all did it, right? We all thought it was an instant, or we all thought it got one card per color and then cast them, or we all thought, you know.
Well, the crazier one was that it stays in exile and you could cast it at any time.
Oh, yeah, just whenever you wanted, yeah.
Yeah, that was a crazy one because you can fetch like a really good counterspell and just like hold it up and you're in a winning position. You probably are not gonna lose. So, but despite all that, you know, it's still spiked up, and I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And now it's at $8 on SCG. So,
oh my God, $8.
But from my knowledge, again, I don't deal with the finances from face to face, so don't have like any insider information. Jared probably knows more than me. Like all the expeditions have been dropping down in price, right?
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah. Yeah, they eased off a little bit. I think what the big thing is that people are opening more than they thought they would.
Yeah.
So that's been one of the things is that a lot of people are getting them. I've been hearing all kinds. Like we've had, again, the Fat Pack thing is hilarious. I think there's been two in Edmonton where somebody's gotten two expeditions out of one Fat Pack. I don't know what it is.
Why they're so expensive. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, Fat Pack logic. But yeah, I think people are just opening more of them. It's also, cards are more expensive right when a set comes out. So the expeditions, they were first available. And yeah, they're dropping off because everybody's opening them. People have access to them. There are more of them are going online. So that's just normal. I don't think that they're dropping like rocks, but they are dropping. It's getting to the point where eBay is now like really separating itself from some of the online retailers, which is kind of a normal thing. Like usually you'll get a better deal dealing with someone like eBay, but you also don't have that security and you don't have the ability to just buy it right away. And right, that's, right. You know, the downside to eBay. It's like, oh, I'm buying a near mint that's been run over by something, you know? You don't know what that NM means. Like, it's pretty terrible. Like, I remember one time where I bought a playset of Underground Seas, like, right, like, when they were still very expensive, but they were not ridiculous expensive, and I got a bunch of Underground Rivers.
Oh,
and the guy's
sweet.
Like, oh, well, it's pretty much the same thing. Like, like stupid shit like that.
That's like pretty much the same card, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much the same one. So you don't have to deal with that shit when you're dealing with like a face to face or an SCG or Card Kingdom or whatever the case may be. So that's the, you know, the pluses and the minuses to something like eBay. I still like buying stuff on there. Again, it's the only place I can find my Korean singles. So that's pretty awesome.
I do have to ask Jared, like, have we ever talked about the Fat Pat thing? Like, I hear it all the time, and I have to imagine personally it's just some exaggerated fat, like, thing, but do you think this is real, that people think that you can open more good stuff in a Fat Pack, or is it just, like,
oh, no, it's
the number
sure,
of people
it's
who
for
buy
sure
them?
Muffin stats. Like, I always get really good opens from Fat Pack, always.
Yeah, yeah, so absolutely. Same like thing with me is that I buy Fat Pack. What? I buy a Fat Pack for every set, 100%, and my Fat Packs always come out good. Like,
what?
Yeah. I used to do the same thing. Like, every Fat Pack I've ever bought has been way better, like 100 times better than every box I've ever bought.
What the fuck?
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense to me.
No, the sampling, sense. Like, I know that it isn't any better.
Yeah, it has
like
to
there isn't like there isn't something in the print run that's like, oh well, all the good packs, half of them go on the boxes and the other half go to the Fat Packs, you know? It's,
yeah, like,
it's not like that there's like a conveyor belt that does that, but for
it's
what
like, how do they even know what's good or what's bad? Like, they'd have to program it in too, like,
exactly. But it just, for whatever case, I always find that I get more mythics out of a Fat Pack. Like, if I put all of my Fat Pack packs to it. Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but like, just saying, like, if I put all my Fat Packs together, all the packs that I got in out of them, my rate of opening mythics far superior. Like, I can't even word.
That's how good it is,
Kiwi. I can't even. But yeah, I get better results out of Fat Packs. But the fun thing is that I only buy one. I don't want to buy two because I know that there's no way that it's actually better.
Oh, no, like, as soon as you buy two, you're getting the packs that have like no rares in them.
Yeah, so it's just like I buy one, I score big, and I fucking take my winnings and leave. Like, it's like you go into the casino, you put it all on black, then you take your fucking money and go home. But for whatever reason, with the packs, they always pay out for me. So
for you, NJ.
I make sure not to push my luck because I know that there is no way that they are actually better. But Eve McCray did fact check that last week, and he did confirm that Fat Packs are better.
Yeah, he did. We got fact check.
Yeah, we had fat checking. Oh, so I appreciate Alex Walsh.
Going to the fucking
Namsung Wook is not yet not a Yeti. He put a picture out there showing.
Oh yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah,
confirmed, not a Yeti. That was amazing.
I mean, I don't know if it's confirmed yet. It's just like pretty close. I mean, that could be a shaved Yeti. Like, have you seen Harry and the Henderson?
Alex, hit me up on Twitter, buddy. I will send you a two. I like Brad with the Santa Lands, but I think it's pretty much set. They're Battle Lands.
So good, the Santa Lands.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Cedric called them Battlelands on the stream. It's locked in.
Yeah, it's locked
in. Yeah.
Like I said, whoever says it on the stream first, that's what it is. 100%.
Yeah, so SCG coverage. We called it last week. We said whatever they call it on the SCG thing, that's what it's going to be called. They called it Battlelands. Battlelands are it.
And I thought it made the most sense having, like I said, when I looked at LSV's review, that's what he was calling them, and it's just the most generic one of them all, so... That's what they're going to be named. Wow, the Fat Packs, it's just interesting. All the different tweets and comments or Reddit comments or even tweets at me, I've had to start, had a discussion with people like heavy meta listener about it, and you know, they're just like thinking the business is out to screw them. But like Jeremy explained it the best, like, you know, it's not the store fault that people are just like infinite buying them, and they just couldn't keep them in stock. And you know, they can't, like, even if it was lower, my argument was like, even if the price was lower, it's not like you were gonna get one anyways, unless you like, you were one of the first early ones to go grab them, because they're just coming off the shelves. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of these people, just like for iPhones and stuff like that, they just want to be first one there so they could sell it off on eBay and make a profit.
They didn't want it to have it or whatever.
Right. So it's not like, you know.
It's that whole argument that feels like a pile of shit, where they're like, well, we made it expensive so you'd have a chance to buy it. Yeah, and the whole mindset to that is that if it was retail price.
That's what they say with those garbage sets they keep putting out once a year. What are those called? From the vault?
Yeah.
Like,
no, if they sold at retail, someone, some fucking dirtbag with no fucking job, who all they do is they go around and they get all the flyers,
like, some Jeremy and they
They sit there and they go and they're like, oh, you know what? This is on sale at Walmart. I'm going to go buy 700 of them, and I'm going to sell them on eBay.
All over Twitter, where they're like, went to Target and got them to price match my pre-sale price from some online retailer. So got a bunch of fat packs for $29.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these.
It's not like you were going to get anything.
And it's like, are they opening them? They should open one. They'll get sick rares, but if they open any more than that, they'll get fucked. They'll knock the magic out of the box, fuckers.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of these guys who just like, who are gonna go from card store to card store, and if it's a cheap price, just buy them out, and it's like, fuck. And then sell them on eBay. Anyways, it was just
three in boxes from face to face, because I only got two waiting for me at my LGS, so.
Ooh.
Yeah,
so. We sold our Japanese one the minute I posted about them, and it was like, I was pretty surprised.
No, people like that kind of stuff. Let's see, what's Korean? $20 more for Korean.
What's interesting is I think we have a shit ton of Fate Reforged fat packs left in the stock.
Yeah,
room.
Who the fuck wants Fate Reforged? Nobody.
All right. I think that's a show.
Jeez, I want to talk about something. What was interesting? There was something I wanted to talk about. I wanted to say a thing. Oh,
you're on the clock, man. Hurry
Josh
up.
Josh Lemish.
Oh, fuck that guy.
So okay. I'm just gonna read his question out, and we can discuss this, because why the fuck not? I stumbled upon folks who make and duel with custom lightsabers,
i.e.
aluminum tools with polycarbonate plastic blades lit up by LEDs and sound cards. Basically, super cool, noisy flashlights to satisfy the geek in all of us. The good ones go for $1,000. I might be able to make one for myself under $300. I asked my wife what color I should make one with, and she said, disappointment isn't a color. What can I do to sway her?
Like, who wrote that for her? That's like a line from Friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Josh, you fucking got like a good wife. Like, she's fucking dropping those bombs. That's awesome. I tried comparing it to her having a fancy purse versus carrying around a plastic Walmart bag, but that only got me angry glares.
Of course it did. Because a fancy bag for $300 plus the wallet for $175 plus another bag later down the road. Those are totally different than anything men like.
So what can we do for Josh here? Like, how do we
I had a sick reply to Josh, and it looks like fucking KYT deleted it.
No, I never delete your shit, man.
Yeah, you obviously did, because if you didn't, it would be on my fucking...
Oh, then we'll check it later.
Yeah.
Did you press the buttons?
I did press them.
I'll double check. Maybe you got like... Maybe like the spam filter, like spammed
KYT,
it out.
Are
I don't
you
know.
Like some fascist, like that, like does editorial control over the comments?
What?
No, I don't. I don't.
Shit.
The comment system does it by itself, so I'll have to double check that. But yeah, what was your reply?
So, for what it's worth, we know that disgust hates Josh, and they're out to get you, buddy. So that's sweet. Next. Yeah.
What I said is that he should Google what color is disappointment, and then something will show up, and he could get his lightsaber in that color. And when she's like, like, what is this? Then he can say, like, oh, I got in the color that you said, honey.
That's good.
Yeah. Fuck her.
I like it.
That's right. Right in the pussy.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think there's ever been a thing that I've wanted to have that's even similar, like a fucking lightsaber.
So this one here, like, maybe you game this. Maybe you try and, like, turn it back on her and just say, like, hey, this is something that I thought would be interesting that we could do together. We could build this lightsaber together. And it's just something I wanted to do. Try something. You know, it's like, I want to try something that is something that I'm passionate about that we can do together. And then, like, go to a cooking course or something with her to, like, kind of, you know, like, repay it, like, as a let's get to know each other more, you know, through our relationship. And, like, then that's where you can be like, but, you know, I just, all I wanted to start with was the color and disappointment. Just, you know, it really hurts. And, you know, just, like, fucking laying with the guilt. But maybe that's kind of scummy, so.
I don't know, the do it together card.
Like, that's epic.
Yeah. The do it together. Maybe you could do photo shoots when it's all done. Like, you know, you go get the professional photographer and you do the crazy photo shoots because everybody's doing these themed photo shoots for, like, weddings and stuff like that. You do, like, a little anniversary photo shoot with that kind of stuff because the Star Wars movies, like, are coming out. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, we went and saw. The wife and I went and saw Star Trek when they redid, like, the J.J. Abrams ones or whatever.
Yeah.
And when we got out of it, my wife, for about 3.5 hours, maybe a day and a half, she was a Star Trek fan because she thought it was really cool. But then she realized, wait a second, that's just one of those nerdy things that Jeremy likes.
Yeah. Yep.
But there was a moment there where it's like, I got an in, I got to exploit
it. My wife did that too with Magic, where she was really into broccoli, just into the mono broccoli card.
Yeah, mono broccoli.
She was all about that shit. Then she figured out that you kill mono broccoli with mono skulls, and it wasn't fun anymore.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was. But she gave it a good college try, you know?
Absolutely.
Experimentation, that's the key. And now she
I wish
magic
that the Ladies Planeswalker Society kind of took more hold, or that it was, like, growing much more. Like, do you guys have any of that in Calgary? Do you have any of that out in, like, Quebec at all? Do you even know what I'm talking about when I bring that up?
No, never heard of it.
KYT?
Nope, never heard of it.
Well, never heard of it. Okay.
This is a great thing to end the show on.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So Tifa Robles, I think, is who started it. Mike Robles used to work for Wizards. Tifa did too. I think she was a brand manager or something like that. Again, you don't just fucking fact check it if you don't want to
listen. Just Google that.
Just fucking Google it. But she started up a group, and I think it was out of Seattle because that's where they were at the time. And it was a group that was designed to be like a, what would the term be? Like a better comfort zone for women to learn how to play Magic, because guys can be really jerks. We can be real dicks at the Magic tournaments. Like, you know, we got into it, we've talked about it in the past, like microaggressions and all that kind of stuff. Like, oh, does your boyfriend play, or which guy are you here with, you know, these types of things where it's like there's this like weird baseline assumption that women can't play Magic unless there's a guy there who brought them there, who's, you know, put them in that position to play Magic, that they're somehow incapable of being able to do that. So it was a group and a get together for women to play Magic together. It was kind of like, this is like the girls' night out type thing, and create an environment that harbored women to be able to get into Magic and give them a comfortable place to play and kind of a starting off point. And I think it's an absolutely fantastic idea, especially when you hear all like these LGSs and stuff like that, who are sometimes struggling to try and figure out how to get new people to sign up to the game and grow their numbers and stuff like that. It just seems like this is a real obvious thing there. It's saying like, well, let's attract the other half of the I guess you would say like the what is the term for it when you say like the
demographic?
Well, not the demographic, but yeah, the demographic in a sense. So, you know, it's the gender is not so gender is not binary anymore. You know, it's been a binary concept for a very long time, but still, like to say, you know, we got lots of men. How do we get more women? You know, and that seems like a really easy place to go and saying like, let's make things a little bit more inviting. Let's, you know, put it onto an odd night where we try and get everybody out and try and create this really cool environment for people to learn how to play Magic. Cool environment for women to learn how to play Magic, where they can play amongst their peers and other people who might not be as experienced, or we do have the experienced women player in the city to be able to create this really cool environment. And I'm just really looking forward to kind of taking off in Edmonton, but I know in a lot of the US cities they have these groups that are going. So
well, I never heard of that. Are they successful? Like, do they work? Like, how do they market that? Like, hey girls, wanna try Magic? Come play it. Because the other, like, there's two problems with that. One is a lot of girls that I know are just gonna be like, no, because they've already had a negative experience from all the microaggressions from men or whatever from the last time they played, which might have been 5 years ago, 5 minutes ago, it doesn't really matter. And then the other problem is, like, a lot of people don't even know, just people don't even know what Magic is. So, like, how do you say, like, hey, just come play Magic with us or whatever, right? Like how do, like, if I said to a group of girls, say, like, from my wife's work, I just say, like, hey, you guys want to play Magic? A lot of them would just say, like, no, that sounds like I don't have any idea what that is, and it doesn't sound like something I want to do. So how do they do that?
Well, they got this website. Which is, let me see here, ladyplaneswalkers.weebly, so weebly.com. And on this site here, it lists that started in 2011, Tifa Robles aims to create a welcoming, friendly environment for women and everyone to learn Magic the Gathering. We host events for all genders and all skill levels to battle Magic in an alternative space. Breaking down the barriers of entry into Magic is number one goal of the group, but we also aim to provide stepping stone into tournament play. With over 50 chapters in the world, this group has been very successful and continues to grow. Outside of running tournaments in stores every week, the group also teaches Magic at many conventions with a large dedicated staff of experienced teachers. And then they got their website and a whole bunch of cool pictures, and they got some like branded stuff. And yeah, it's just, it's even got a thing on here to start a chapter. So yeah, let's make sure Kyle's got a link to that in the show notes and stuff like that, and it kind of talks about what you can do to generate interest, and it's got some logo stuff here and a lot of ideas of how to attract people. And yeah, they've definitely put some work into it, so I think it's a fantastic idea. Again, it's so odd because, like, you talk to some people and I don't know if people just necessarily understand, like, a lot of the players at my store, I don't know if they understand, like, what the advantage is to having more women or having more, more players, just more people of different backgrounds, more people of different concepts, more people of different ideas. Like, it's just great to have more people instead of surrounding yourselves with, like, the same group of people. So I think this is just fantastic. Like, let's expand it. Let's have fun with, you know, just a different demographic. So, yeah.
Yeah, sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. So I think this is something that we should definitely push on a local level, at least. And I know I've talked to a couple of the stores around town about it, but it just seems like a really cool thing to do. A really, really good idea. So.
Yeah, I think so.
I hope it's still going. I don't know if this website's current or not. I know that they've got a Facebook group as well, so probably some stuff going on there. But yeah, that's kind of a weird tangent to take right at the end of a show.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. Goodbye. Yves McRae is awesome. Yeah.
And Josh, fucking try the old fucking your wife angle.
Let us know how it goes. All right, catch you all next week.
Boop.